Good afternoon. This is Health on the Hill. I'm Simon. I'm here with Gil, Jamie, and Chris. Say hello, guys.
Hello.
Yo.
What's up?
We are coming to you from our Fortress of Solitude in the CFER radio station in Prince George, BC on CFER 88.7, 94.7 on cable, and live streaming on CFER.ca. This is our third show, and the topic of today's show is vaccinations. Yes, vaccinations.
Wow.
Yep. So almost everybody has been vaccinated. It's a very topical topic. Oh, wow.
Pretty out of the gates, man.
Yep. All right, guys. What is vaccination? We got to start with that.
Well, there's generally, you just get injected with, there's two different ways of you can be vaccinated. One is with a little tiny bit of whatever you're being vaccinated against, so a tiny protein on the virus, or...
Gil, even more basic than that, what is vaccination?
Oh.
That's doctor speak.
Yeah, I should stop it. Vaccination is an injection to stop you from getting sick from something.
Okay, so it's a way to prevent getting sick in the future. It's a conservative health measure.
Yeah, and generally, it's much cheaper than getting sick in the future.
Okay. So, can you tell, you were on that track, just finish what you were saying, sorry. Can you tell us again, how does vaccination work?
So, as I was saying before Simon rudely interrupted me, there's two ways. One, you can get injected with something that's called an attenuated virus, which means that it's the real live virus, but it won't make you sick. So they've hurt it, or they've damaged it in a certain way that means that it can't become contagious and it won't make you sick, but your immune system will recognize it and will mount an immune response and will learn that next time that I get infected by this thing, I should react to it immediately, and that prevents you from getting sick because it stops it just as the first few things come in instead of allowing the virus or bacteria to bloom up and make you sick.
Thanks, Gil. Okay, now I think at this time it's probably a good idea to just tell you about what Canada's normal vaccination schedule is. Now, this is what Health Canada has agreed. It's the agreed upon schedule of vaccines set by Health Canada for residents of Canada, and these are generally given to children under one. These are the diseases that are currently being vaccinated against. I think I said that about five times already. Okay, diphtheria, pertussis, tetanus, hepatitis B, varicella zoster, also known as chickenpox, polio, measles, mumps, and rubella, pneumococcal, Haemophilus influenza, and that is actually all of them. So that's quite the list of diseases.
And you know, some of those you haven't even really heard of lately, and
that's because of the vaccination.
Yeah, We'll talk a bit more about that in a minute. So this sounds too good to be true, if you can just take a needle and not get all these awful diseases. So somebody tell me, why would anybody not get vaccinated?
Oh, I was just recently in the press, there's been all sorts of talk of autism being linked to vaccines, whether there's evidence for this or not. And that's sort of one controversy. There's this other theory, I think it's called herd immunity. Is that?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And that has to do with the principle that if everybody else is getting vaccinated, why should I vaccinate my child? which leads to...
So herd immunity is if everybody gets vaccinated against something, then it won't become an endemic problem. So not everyone has to get vaccinated for people to be safe. So someone decides that I'm going to be the one person that doesn't get vaccinated because everyone else is vaccinated and I won't get sick. That's essentially what herd immunity is. But the problem, if you have herd immunity, if you're counting on herd immunity, is if everyone decides that they're not going to get vaccinated because everyone else is getting vaccinated, then no one gets vaccinated and people start getting sick with what they could have avoided.
So herd immunity is more of a social condition than it is a medical condition. Is that right?
That sounds about right.
Uh-huh. Okay. So Chris, you mentioned autism. I know this is a touchy subject and certainly one in the news. Just ask Jenny McCarthy or whoever else is, you know, involved in this issue. But do we know some of the facts on this? Like, what is the link between autism and vaccination?
Well, other than one study that was released a few years ago that said there was a link, every single study that has been done has found no evidence. And there have been very large studies. Thousands and thousands and thousands of people have been looked at to look for a link between vaccination and autism. And the one study that did find a link, a few years after that, it was revealed that the person had actually falsified the data. So in essence, there has never been a study to prove a link. And as a matter of fact, they have all shown that there is absolutely no link between autism and vaccination. And yet it still remains controversial.
So what might be other real life risks with vaccination?
Well, there's always an issue of an allergic reaction to contents of the vaccine, not necessarily, or not the the pathogen that you're being vaccinated against, but something that's used in the vaccine as an additive or a volume.
The filler.
The fillers, mm-hmm. basically. You can have allergic reactions to those, and that can cause quite a serious...
Now, I'm not going to say common in the sense that it occurs frequently, but one of the reactions that occurs, one of the reactions that does occur that is most frequent, although reactions are quite infrequent, is a reaction to eggs. If you have an allergy to eggs, many vaccines are made within eggs, and there is a small amount of egg protein within vaccines. So if you're allergic to eggs, you may react to that, and that is one reason why you may not get vaccinated, or you may choose to go a different route.
So basically, one could say that the benefits from vaccination generally outweigh the risks. Would you say that in general?
From what I've seen, yes. But we can't tell people what to do, again, because we're medical students. For myself, I get vaccinated.
Yeah. Along those lines, we talked about herd immunity and some of the reasons why people don't get vaccinations. And I just wanted to talk about one thing. I was in India for a month this summer, and I actually saw a few people with polio, and that was the first time I'd ever seen an adult with polio, because we have virtually eradicated it here in Canada. And it was fairly shocking to see, you know, an adult basically walking with his hands, essentially crawling along the ground from this disease that he had as a child, which is 100% preventable. So I think, again, vaccines are victims of their own success, in that we don't understand what diphtheria is anymore. We don't understand what pertussis is, and polio, to a large extent, we don't even know what these diseases are. And that it's hard, because what do? Do we start doing public relations campaigns on what diphtheria actually is to scare people into remembering why they got vaccinated?
Like the immense, or the extremely high level of success that vaccines have had is actually creating an indifference to the diseases that they're vaccinating against, and that's a very dangerous thing, or can be.
Yeah. Another topic too is it seems to be the universal opinion of the medical establishment that vaccinations are good. So what are we going to do as physicians when we have a patient that comes in and says, no, I do not want to vaccinate my child? I mean, how do we deal with that?
I think the best we can do is try to educate them. We can't tell a patient that it's... We can't berate them, we can't make fun of them, we can't call them dumb, because that's not right. So we have to do our best to educate them, to try to convince them in a respectful manner that vaccination is a very good idea, that there are many reasons that we've begun doing it. There's reasons... If it wasn't good, generally, the government wouldn't pay for it, because vaccination campaigns can be expensive. And one of the main reasons governments do it is, one, because it saves them money in the long run from having to provide healthcare to people who get an infection in the future. And two, the people demanded it originally when a vaccine became available. They said, we want this vaccine to be paid for so that everyone can get it, so that we don't continue to get these horrible diseases like pertussis.
I think another point is that patients need to realize that when they're going in to see their doctor, their non-homeopathic doctor, that their doctor is trained in evidence-based medicine, and therefore they will be advocating for vaccines. And they're not just towing the company line. It's based on what they've learned in training, and you're going to have a hard time convincing an established healthcare professional in Canada against vaccines.
Can you, for those that don't know, can you explain what evidence-based medicine is?
Evidence-based medicine is pretty much the foundation of doctor or physician training in Canada and a good chunk of the Western world. It's basically making decisions on black and white hard facts, if you can. So using scientific research to make a decision. It's taking emotion and it's taking emotion out of the decision-making process. So, I mean, me saying, you know, I don't want to get a vaccine because I believe that it made my grandma sick, that's not making an evidence-based decision. That's making an emotion-based decision.
So what you're saying is you can't base a decision on whether your grandma got sick. You have to do a study and look at thousands of grandmas and see if a large number of them got sick when compared to a group that was different in only one way.
That's right. It's looking at things at a population level rather than an individual level. It's looking at things statistically rather than, again, emotionally or anecdotally.
All right. Well, I think we've kind of flogged that horse for a while, so let's move on to something that's very topical. What about H1N1? What's going on? What have you guys...
H1N1. I haven't heard that lately.
So H1N1, swine flu, there's supposed to be a vaccine coming out for that in November. Kind of a personal health question. Would you guys consider getting it if it was available to you?
Yep.
I think I would as well. I think I don't think there's any harm in getting it, and if it does protect you from the illness, so much the better.
Yeah, I think I'd have to take the conservative approach on that as well. I don't see a negative of taking it. I can't get swine flu from the vaccine, so personally, I have no reason to not get that vaccine.
What? Why is that?
You tell me.
Well,
okay. Well, you can't get the flu from the flu vaccine because it is a dead vaccine. They use the proteins from the viral coat to cause your immune system to react to it. So there is no live virus in a flu vaccine.
Well, in the vaccine they're going to be using here in Canada, there's the two ways we talked about. There's the damaged one that can't harm you, and then there's the piece, like you were talking about. And in most of the world, they're using damaged live virus. So there will be live virus, but it won't make people sick. Here in Canada, they've gone one step further. It's just a little piece of the virus, one little protein that you're going to be vaccinated with. And so there is absolutely no chance it'll give you swine flu because swine flu is not in the vaccine.
Do we have any idea how effective this vaccine will actually be at preventing swine flu? I mean, I know that's a difficult question and it's asked all the time. You know, you hear people say, like, I got the flu shot last year and I still got the flu.
It's different with swine flu because the way the flu shot is organized is they choose three strains that they guess will be big in the coming year. And they make that decision around February for the following winter. And when they make that decision, they guess, they start making the flu vaccine, and throughout the summer they start doing clinical trials using evidence-based medicine to show that, yes, it works against the strains that they thought and may still think will be big. And then from there they roll out the mass immunizations, and they hope that the big flu flu that hits the that winter is the ones they've chosen. With swine flu, it's a little different. They know swine flu will be big, so they've made a vaccine specific for swine flu, and the vaccine has been tested. I haven't looked at the clinical results, but my understanding, based on the fact that they're going to roll it out and vaccinate a lot of people with it and pay a lot of money for that, is that it's got to work at least a little bit.
There's also a huge public misconception about what the flu actually is. A lot of people come in with upper respiratory infections, colds, and they think that that's the flu and that's what the flu shot should protect them against. Why is that? Like, why is an upper respiratory infection and the flu different? How are they different?
So if you have a cold, your nose is running and you've got a sore throat and maybe you're coughing up some phlegm and you don't feel well, but you're still functioning, but you're sick.
So that's not influenza?
That's not the flu. The flu is like you've been hit by a truck. It is a full body infection.
What if you actually get hit by a truck? Is that influenza?
If you have the flu at the same time, yes. Otherwise, no.
Okay.
So the flu is a very severe illness that makes you feel very sick. Most people, almost everyone, recovers from that. They just feel like garbage for several days. Whereas with a cold, you don't feel well, you may feel tired, but it is confined to the lungs.
Good call, and we better be careful because that almost sounds like we're dispensing medical advice.
Almost.
Okay.
Okay, so another sort of current hot topic along the lines with vaccination.
Hot topic.
Thanks, Simon. Is the HPV vaccine, otherwise known as Gardasil.
What's HPV?
HPV is human papillomavirus, and it's most people might know it as sort of the virus that causes genital warts or that's associated with cervical cancer. And so the HPV vaccine was rolled out a few years ago, and it protects, or is designed to protect against four strains of the HPV virus, two of which are associated with, I think, about 70% of cases of cervical cancer. The other two, while only associated with genital warts, commonly can be confused with the cancer-associated strains upon testing using a pap smear.
So what part of the population do they want to protect with the Gardasil vaccination?
The vaccine, I think, is being aimed at females between the ages of 9 and 26.
I think that sounds right.
And that's the population which is most effective because the vaccine is only effective if you haven't been exposed to the virus before. And you get exposed through sexual contact.
So in general, would it be worth it to vaccinate the young women in our society with this drug or this vaccination?
And that's where some of the controversy comes in. Because of the way that HPV is transmitted, there's a discussion about how giving the vaccine could promote attitudes, sort of a nonchalant attitude towards sexual activity in this age group, and it's...
Well, the argument is, if you're vaccinated, you're protected, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, do you know anything about that argument? Have you heard the discussion? I realize it's not big up here. It's bigger in the southern states where it's more of an issue because of their conservative values. But do they cite any evidence or is it just an emotional argument? What do you guys?
I would assume it's just an emotional argument. And how would you have any evidence of something like that? Yeah.
Well, I think it comes down to a do no harm kind of a situation here again. What is the harm in taking the Gardasil vaccine? Anybody?
I know the one that is cited most recently is the death of a girl in England. Shortly after vaccination, she died from an acute reaction. But when the pathologist did an investigation, they found that she died from a cardiac arrest. She had a heart attack from a giant tumor that no one had found and was completely unrelated to the vaccination. It was just a fluke. So that's the most commonly quoted one recently, and it turns out it was completely unrelated.
Okay. So it sounds like there's no reason to not vaccinate. Now we need to talk about reasons to vaccinate. It's an expensive vaccine.
Yeah, for the course of 3 injections, which are required, it costs I think it's $360.
That was US dollars.
US dollars, which makes it the most expensive vaccine currently available.
Okay, so that's a huge barrier. Now, how do we value the result of this vaccine? Like, how do we say, okay, you know, $360 to vaccinate every adolescent girl in Canada, is that worth it? I mean, I guess economically, the way to value it is we're preventing X number of cases of cervical cancer and it costs X dollars to treat cervical cancer. Obviously, that's just dollars and cents. There's a whole other component to this.
If you want to argue the economics of it, you also take into account the lost working years of the of women who die. There's 400 died in Canada last year from cervical cancer. There was an additional 1,300 that were diagnosed with cervical cancer. So that's a lot of lost hours in the workforce. That's a lot of lost hours working at home. So if you want to throw those in, it can become quite an expensive loss to lose those people or have those people diagnosed, let alone just treat them. But then if you're giving every girl a $360 vaccine, how much does that cost? And if they do decide, because the GlaxoSmithKline, which makes the vaccine, is pushing, I believe it was Glaxo, maybe it was Merck.
It's Merck, yeah.
Okay, I stand corrected. But they're pushing to have boys vaccinated now too. That would pretty much double the cost.
Yeah, and that's not the males wouldn't be vaccinated to prevent cervical cancer. It would be aimed at more
men preventing. Do not have cervixes. We are prepared to say that.
Okay.
It would be more aimed at preventing infection with HPV and preventing genital warts, and in addition to that, preventing the spread of the HPV virus to other people through those infected males.
So the boys' vaccination.
So Gardasil is a sticky issue. Immunity. It appears to be
can get most of the population. To be an effective
vaccine,
girls,
but it's an expensive one.
Hopefully, eradicate transmission of this virus and prevent cervical cancer. As far as the topic of Gardasil and its vaccination goes, it's going to remain a controversy, and ultimately, it's going to be up to the parents of these young girls right now. To whether they want them to get vaccinated or not. So.
Yeah. So it's 2009 right now, and obviously we know that in, is it February of 2010?
Yes, it is.
The 2010 Olympics are coming to Vancouver, in case you hadn't heard. But regarding our vaccination topic, the Olympics have a big public health issue, and maybe one of you guys can explain what the public health issue of the Olympics will be.
Well, okay, I mean, to put it quite simply, there are people coming from all over the world and converging on Vancouver, and that clearly introduces a lot. I mean, the sheer number of people possibly having infections.
Not only is it going to be a melting pot of the cultures, but it's going to be a melting pot of infectious viruses.
Exactly.
With the H1N1 swine flu going on, too, it makes it of particular importance, because if say someone from Mexico or California, where this thing started, comes to compete, I don't know why Mexicans coming to compete in the Winter Olympics, but we won't get into that, is coming to compete, and they bring the infection with them, then it could start an outbreak again. And although the outbreaks that have happened in Australia over their winter were not as bad as some people were predicting, it could still cause some severe illness. So that's one of the important reasons why we need to have the vaccination program in place. And I believe they do have a specific program in place for the Olympics for people coming from elsewhere that may not have been vaccinated. They're going to offer them vaccines.
Does that include the sort of regular schedule of vaccines in addition to something like the H1N1?
I don't know. I've only heard it in terms of the pandemic preparedness for swine flu. So what other issues do you think the Olympics might present in terms of vaccinations or in terms of infectious diseases?
There's going to be enough people coming to British Columbia that probably won't be aware of these issues. So there's going to be a lot of perhaps rampant disease in the form of influenzas.
Yeah, and from a public health standpoint, I think tracking an outbreak would be disastrous, or at the very least, extremely difficult in a situation like that. Because, you know, what if, say, somebody visiting for the Olympics brought a disease and passed it to somebody, and so on and so on. Like, trying to trace where it came from could be next to impossible. You know, you wouldn't have home residences of people that, you know, you'd be trying to track people in a hotel, on and on. It would just be a bit of a nightmare.
That being said, they haven't really had problems. They didn't have huge problems like that in Torino or Salt Lake City or Lillehammer or Nagano in the last Olympics they've had for Winter Olympics during flu season. So maybe they just have adequate preparedness and they know what they're doing. Maybe we can put some faith in government.
Or perhaps there's just a lot of hype going on right now. Who knows, right? I guess we won't know until it happens, right?
Yeah, this situation just shows exactly how unexact of a science medicine really is.
Maybe there's some people out there that have some opinions on swine flu or preparedness. If you do, you can email us at hoth@unbc.ca. You're listening to Health on the Hill. You're with four Northern Medical Program students here at CFUR 88.7 here in Prince George. So one thing we haven't talked about yet is when are vaccinations going to be happening this year for the seasonal flu and for swine flu. Now, it's a little mixed up here in Canada. Each province has been making decisions on when it will happen. And what we care about here is when is it being done in Prince George and throughout BC. So what have you guys heard about when swine flu vaccinations will be available and when they'll be given to the public?
Well, the latest that I've heard about is that the H1N1 vaccine, the pandemic vaccine, will be given to those under special circumstances, such as those with chronic illnesses or in long-term care facilities, those providing essential healthcare services, and among others, will receive the vaccine or can receive the vaccine in November and December of 2009. While the seasonal flu vaccine encompassing the three big strains that they've chosen for this year will be given in January and February of 2010.
So, yeah, that's true. Also with swine flu, once they've done that initial burst to those who are particularly at risk of infection, it will be available to all British Columbians. I've heard it being said by several different physicians giving lectures that there is enough vaccine in British Columbia for all British Columbians to receive a vaccine, especially that since they have found that it would appear that one vaccination round will be enough for most people, other than young children, where they may need two or three.
That makes me feel warm and fuzzy all over.
Good for you, Jamie. And then for the seasonal flu, that's being offered to people who are not at risk of a serious infection in January, which is a change from the normal when it's usually offered in October. The catch is, for some people who are at particular risk of seasonal flu and not swine flu, it will be made available in mid-October this year.
Okay, and I think that's probably a good place to wrap it up for today.
Few things I'd like to say. We'd like to thank you for listening. We'll be back next week with a show on global health. We hope you can join us, same time, same place. And it's been said before, but we'll say it again, we would love your feedback. hoth@umbc.ca. Thank you for listening.